Welcome to the Hilltop United Methodist Church podcast. Hilltop is located in Sandy, Utah, 985 East, 10,600 South. Locals would say 106th. Our two worship services are at 9 o'clock and 10:30. Hope to see you this Sunday. God bless. Bye-bye. This set of readings that Marilyn read, and I'm going to pick it up on, it is a really long set. There's a lot there. There's some things we left out, like, for example, what happens to Nabal. So we're going to probably cover that a little bit in the sermon. It's in my notes. We'll see when I get there or not. But what the context is that the civil war between David and his people and Saul and his people has broken out. It's going on. And David has come to this particular area, and he has provided some protection to Nabal's shepherds. He's helped his fields be protected from those who might damage that. Nabal's name is interesting. Johnny Cash had a song about 30, 40 years ago about a boy named Sue. Remember that? And the nature of that particular song was it made him tough. Well, Nabal's father didn't do him any particular service here, because in Hebrew, Nabal means someone who's foolish. And they don't necessarily mean he's only foolish just as a simpleton. What they mean is that he's foolish in a mean-spirited, vicious way. And so as the story would have been told, what is now out of 1 Samuel, and the people would have been listening to the story having been told, they would, you know, the way Marilyn read it was, he said, a man who was rich, a man who was from Maon. He went through that. And then all of a sudden it goes, and his name was Nabal. I mean, it would have been startling to them. They would have been stunned by that. Who names their kid foolish? Who names their kid mean-spirited foolish? So you've got a sort of a precursor there. Abigail is sort of going to sign on. You have to suppose that the marriage between Abigail and Nabal was either arranged by parents or something's gone horribly wrong because of what I'm going to read. You'll hear it in here. 1 Samuel 25, I'll read from verses 14 to 25. It's page 269 and 270 of your pew Bibles. But one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to salute our master, and he shouted insults at them. Yet the men were very good to us, and we suffered no harm, and we never missed anything when we were in the fields as long as we were with them. They were a wall to us both by day, by night, and by day, all the while we were with them keeping the sheep. Now, therefore, know this and consider what you should do, for evil has been decided against our master and against all his house. He is so ill-natured that no one can speak to him. Servant talking to Abigail. Then Abigail hurried and took 200 loaves, 2 skins of wine. I vote this 2 skins of wine. What do you guys think? 200 loaves, 2 skins of wine, 5 sheep ready dressed, 5 measures of parched grain, 100 clusters of raisins, and 200 cakes of figs. She loaded them on donkeys and said to her young man, "Go on ahead of me. I am coming after you." But she did not tell her husband Nabal. When she rode on the donkey and came down under cover of the mountain, David and his men came down towards her, and she met them. Now David said, "Surely it was in vain that I protected all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that belonged to him. But he has returned me evil for good. God do so to David and more also, if by morning I leave as much as one male of all who belong to him." So that's sort of the statement of the problem that Abigail has. When Abigail saw David, she hurried and alighted from the donkey and fell before David on her face, bowing to the ground. She fell at his feet and said, "Upon me alone, my Lord, be the guilt. Please let your servant speak in your ears and hear the words of your servant. My Lord, do not take seriously this ill-natured fellow, Nabal." You know, we get this little play on the words. "For as his name is, so is he." Nabal is his name. Stupid, foolish is his name. "And folly is with him. But I, your servant, did not see the young man of the Lord whom you sent." This is the word of God for the people of God.
Thanks be to God. Amen.
This last week, I was in Nashville, Tennessee. And I tell you what, going back there, it made me happy to be in the Rocky Mountain West. Came out of the airport, I almost had to cut my way through the humidity to get to the taxi that was going to take me to the hotel I was staying at. I had an interesting experience. The young man who provided the taxi service both ways, it was arranged by the hotel, provided the taxi service both ways, was from Somalia. Very, very bright. Very, very bright young man. He could talk about world circumstances. And both going to the hotel and coming back from the hotel on Thursday morning, we sort of talked about the world, what was going on in the world. And finally, as I was getting ready to get out of the car, get my bag out of the car, and I looked over him and said, "Well, can you explain to me what's going on, what's happening?" He says, "Sure, I can explain to you what's going on. The world's not working like it's supposed to." Wow. Profound. You got a situation here in this particular passage out of Samuel where the world is not working like it's supposed to. It's a tradition. It's part of the story of the early Israelites that hospitality was an important element of who they were. You look in Genesis. Abraham has three people show up, and what's the first thing that he does? It's a bad day for the fatted calf. It wasn't a good, the hospitality didn't extend to the fatted calf, all right? The fatted calf got to be sort of the means of the hospitality. But nonetheless, what does Abraham do? He stops what he's doing, makes cakes, takes the fatted calf, and feeds and sustains and nurtures these three visitors. This is typical of what is the expectation if you're an Israelite. When people show up on your doorstep, you don't do what Nabal basically did. What you're expected to do is when somebody shows up on your doorstep, particularly someone who has shown up on your doorstep, who has kept other raiders, other people involved in the Civil War, away from you and has protected you. Now, let me emphasize here to you, however, that in spite of what it is that Nabal has done to David, it should not be a death sentence. He's being rude. He's not showing hospitality. But David's reaction is a little bit over the top. Just a smidgen over the top. "You don't show me hospitality, therefore I'm going to kill you and all of the males in your household." Not exactly the way you would think of the way the story is supposed to go. So David has an expectation of hospitality and is denied him. And what does he do? He overreacts. He reacts in a pretty negative way. Nabal, there's an expectation of hospitality on him. And what does he do? Nothing. Matter of fact, he rejects the call to hospitality, which is specifically invited there. It comes to Abigail to sort of smooth the waters. It comes to her to this task that she has the task of going to find four or five fatted calves and some figs and some apricots and some dates and some water and some wine. I'm thinking they liked the wine. And they have the opportunity to get this. And David still seems to be in a place where he's going to take his vengeance. He's going to do something about it. And Abigail says, "Please don't do that. Please don't do that. If you had just come to me first, we could have avoided this whole thing." Now, in my household, you guys know that's 100% true. Go to Maryland first. But anyway, so Abigail is the one that gets it restored. She restores the nature of the relationship. She returns it to what's going on. So for both David and Nabal, for David in particular, the world is not working like it's supposed to. So he's going to get angry. Nabal, the world's not working like it's supposed to, and I don't care. And then you get to Abigail. The world's not working like it's supposed to. And what is she doing? She tries to return it to the way it's supposed to work. She tries to get it back and return it to the way it's supposed to work. Hospitality not only was a Jewish Israelite tradition, it was a tradition of the early church. You heard me in my prayer when I was talking about this. The early church thrived not in fine buildings like this. It thrived in house churches. It thrived in hospitality. If you think about the nature of a church, now some of you on the front, you're not looking at the back of anybody's head, all right? But those of you the further back you get, what you're looking at is the back of someone's head. That's the hour that we have together. Do you get to know them by looking at the back of their head? I don't think so. You get to know people in the church by inviting them over, by singing in the choir, by being a part of a United Methodist women's circle, by being part of a United Methodist men's group, by being part of a Sunday school class, or a Monday school class, or a Tuesday school class, or a Wednesday school class, or participating at the Salt Rescue Mission of Salt Lake. I say it wrong every time, Marilyn reminds me. The Rescue Mission of Salt Lake and participating there. That's part of how you get to know the church. That's how you get to be the church. But I cannot emphasize to you strongly enough that the early church, how they got going was by inviting people into their presence and saying, "You're important. I care about you. I want you to be part of my life." David and Nabal seem to be both worshiping at the temple of me. They seem to be worshiping at the temple of me. And what Abigail does here is she reminds him in a very poetic, very cogent way that no, we don't worship at the temple of me. We worship at the temple of we. The temple of we. It's this idea of understanding that it isn't about you and only you. It's about all of us all together. Now, I'm mindful of what's going on in our world. I am mindful. Believe me, I am mindful of what's going on in our world. It's not working like it's supposed to. Max Lucado, Church of Christ pastor down in San Antonio, writes, is it possible for the nature of how the world is going on, if whether or not we've got these experiences that are going on in our world that makes us wonder if we can all get along? We wonder the same thing today. Can Hispanics live in peace with Anglos? Can Democrats find common ground with Republicans? We can only hope, right? Can a Christian family carry on a civil friendship with a Muslim couple down the street? Man in my cab, the guy driving me in the cab, Muslim. Can divergent people get along? And Lucado offers the idea that we can get along by offering hospitality. And how do we do that? He writes, hospitality opens the door to uncommon community. It's no accident that hospitality and hospital come from the same Latin word, for they both lead us to the same result, healing. When you open your door to someone, you're sending this message: you matter to me and to God. You may think you're saying, come on over for a visit, but what your guest hears is, I'm worth the effort. I'm worth the effort. Now, I will say to you that on the second Friday of every month, we extend hospitality, but we don't do it here. We go down to the fourth and fourth block, fourth west and fourth north, south block, and we offer hospitality there. We say to that group, you're important to us. There's times when I preach a sermon and I sort of remind everybody that this sermon is directed at every one of us. This is one of those moments. This is one of those moments where I want to say these thoughts to some degree, is for all of us here. Wherever we are on the hospitality spectrum, some are way down here worshiping at the altar of me, all right? And there's others up here that are aspiring to the altar of we, and they're good. But all of us can stand the opportunity to be invited out of our comfort zone and out of the position where we are. Eugene Peterson writes, he's a Presbyterian pastor, he's the author of that paraphrase of the Bible called The Message. He's the author of that. And he's a retired Presbyterian pastor. And he has a book out called The Pastor. And in the book, he talks about what the conditions are for a pastor's wife. And this author here has taken what Peterson has written and changed it. He's morphed a little bit from the pastor's wife to a church member. So every time that I read the word church member, the original, it said pastor's wife. But it applies. It applies to all of us here. Being a church member is a vocation. It's a way of life. It means participation in an intricate web of hospitality, living at the intersection of human need and God's grace. Let me say that again. Living at the intersection of human need and God's grace. Inhabiting a community where men and women who don't fit are welcomed. If the world doesn't work very well together, the way it's supposed to work inside the church is those that are a little odd, those who are a little unusual, think a little bit differently, they're supposed to be brought back into the center. You're supposed to invite them back in. Where neglected children are noticed, where the stories of Jesus are told, and people who have no stories find that they do have stories. Stories that are part of the Jesus story. Being a church member places us strategically yet unobtrusively at the heavily trafficked intersection between heaven and earth. Hospitality is one of the core values of people that say they follow Christ. One of the core. What got Jesus in trouble with some of the people of his own day? His extension of hospitality to those that were on the outside of that world. Tax collectors, prostitutes, lepers. Fill in the blank. We have people in our own world that need hospitality extended to them. It's something that all of us have the capacity to do. That's the invitation for us. I think sometimes we do a very, very good job of hospitality here. And other times, we seem to get a little overly focused on me. So the invitation for all of us here today is to be a diagnostician, be a diagnostic person who can watch what's going on. Walk into the fellowship hall, for example, and cast your eyes around the fellowship hall. Do you see a first-time visitor standing there by themselves? Sadly, we do. We sadly do that on way too many occasions, where we have a first-time visitor who walks into fellowship. We say, go to fellowship hall and have fellowship. And then they walk in, and nothing happens. I sort of have to walk over and tap somebody on the shoulder and say, would you mind going over and have coffee with that person who just walked in? And people go. It ought to be a natural course of events. It ought to be something basic to us of how we go about doing that. It is critical to us and how it is that we welcome people into this church. Now, I will say to you that last week we had a gentleman from Nebraska here, and he had exactly the opposite reaction of what I just described. His reaction was, what a warm group. What a warm group. I must have had 7 people walk over to me and welcome me to the church today. So we do it episodically. We do a real good job sometimes, and other times, for whatever reason, that person just falls off the conveyor belt. Here's the invitation for all of us. All of us have the role of helping provide hospitality. They may look a little odd. They may look a little different. They may smell a little different. Certainly what happens on Friday nights down at the rescue mission of Salt Lake, they smell a little different. But they're precious in God's sight. Welcome them and show hospitality for them. It's a chance for us not to worship at the temple of me, but instead worship at the temple of we, and remind ourselves that the world is a broken place. The place, the world is not working quite like it's supposed to, and we are agents of how that world is made to work like God wants it to be, how God says it's supposed to work. That's the task for us. Please stand as you are able. And we're going to sing a piece of music that sort of paraphrases the sermon, which is this idea of drawing the circle wide. Draw that circle wide, and then once we've drawn it wide, make it wider still, so that all God's children can be invited in. God bless you.
Hilltop is located in Sandy, Utah, 985 East, 10,600 South. Locals would say 106th. Our two worship services are at 9 o'clock and 10:30. Hope to see you this Sunday. God bless. Bye-bye.